Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you guys have been waiting all day for this one, and I completely understand why. Mariners manager Scott Service joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, Stace. How are you doing today?
I am feeling great, Scott. It was a fantastic game. I had so much fun watching it. And Skip, I'm no lip reader, but I was looking back over that video of you getting real fired up, and I wrote down what I thought you were saying. So tell me if I'm hitting the nail on the head with this one. I thought you said, dash gone it, you get the heck out of here. Fiddlesticks with that kind of play. Is that kind of, am I getting there a little bit?
You're right on.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That good at lip reading, yes. When I got home late last night, my wife reminded me that probably wasn't the best way to go with it. But sometimes the emotions get the best of you. So it was a heck of a game. I can't say enough about the fight our guys have shown throughout the entire season. And last night was just kind of the epitome of that. We just don't give up. And it's a great group to be around, and we got a good thing going over here right now.
Scott, my first question to you is, are you okay? I know Tom Murphy got you 2 days ago with the high five and the bruise on the hand. And the high five line is getting out of hand right now. And I was afraid J.P. Crawford was going to knock you over last night.
No, the guys are, you know, everybody's, you know, riding the high. And, you know, there's so much that goes into such a long season. And, you know, players playing through, you know, getting little injuries, banged up, adversity, struggling, all this other stuff. But, you know, what's really fun to see right now is everybody pulling for each other. And when you get to that point, you ultimately, you're playing something a little bit bigger than yourself. And we have such a neat group. There's a lot of young players certainly trying to find their way at the big league level and prove themselves. But, you know, they're gaining confidence every day. Like I talked about early in this season, the goal was really just to continue to get better. And we do. I think you see the quality of our at-bats late in games with young players that have never been in those spots before. And it's invaluable. The experience they're gaining and the fact that they're coming through in those spots, it just helps their confidence so much.
Scott, the playing for each other is something that really jumps out at me. And the fact that it has come along so quickly, that I don't think is something that can exactly be taught, but it's something that we are seeing, something that they are talking about. How have you seen that evolve?
Well, I think, you know, at times people look at professional sports and they think, oh, these guys are just playing for a big contract or whatnot. And, you know, when you can get a group of guys together that's just really focused on doing something as a group and certainly for our organization. As everybody knows, it's been a long time since we've been in the playoffs. And, you know, when it's constantly thrown at you day after day, and even, you know, the majority of these players, they don't have any experience here or know what the Mariners fans have gone through or whatever. They're just, you know, they're trying to get better. They're trying to do whatever they can to help, you know, this group move forward and keep us in a playoff hunt. And it's just been so fun to watch. And I love coming to the ballpark every day, and I know they do as well.
Scott, I know generally we've been talking here, or you guys have been talking big picture stuff, but yesterday...
Scott, I forgot to tell you. Mike Salk is in here.
Who we got in here? That sounds like...
It's Howdy. It's Howdy.
No, it's not.
And he's ready.
Scott, I should have warned you. I'm so sorry I sprung this on you. Jake is on paternity leave. Jake and Brooke just welcomed a new baby girl, and so Mike Salk is in here saying hi to an old friend and chatting with you about this game.
Okay, so I got to put my Salk hat on. Go ahead, Mike.
You got to be serious for a moment. I'm just curious. Last night, as you're in that game, you get down early, you start to come back. At some point, when do you decide that you're going to go for it and use your weapon? Like at some point, you have to make the decision. I'm going to use some of the strongest bullets in my gun. I'm going to throw Graveman in the eighth. When did you make that decision that we got a shot to go after this game?
Well, I think the players on the club, I think three or four of them throughout the course of the game, after Seager hit the three-run homer, guys that are kind of before they go on deck, they're standing next to me, they're getting their batting gloves on, and I think three different guys told me, Skip, we're going to win this game. Skip, we're going to win this game. This is going to happen. And after the third one said, and the third one happened to be Jared Kelnick, and I said, I think you're right, Jared. I do think you're right. We are going to win this game, but... You know, we didn't have a whole lot of bullets to shoot out of the bullpen last night. Certainly ran the guys really hard over the weekend against the A's. You know, Gravy and Sewald were down on Sunday. They did not pitch, so they were available last night. you know, typically you're only going to fire those guys if you're in a tied or up game. I just thought the momentum was in our favor, and we should do everything we could to give our guys a chance. And because we were so thin, you know, it was a good pocket to put Gravy in there, and he did a great job, as did Seawald after we had the lead.
Well, and then you make the decision to bring your third catcher into the game. It works out. You get the grand slam. But what do you do if you don't? Like, what were your options for defense in the ninth if you hadn't gotten the grand slam?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about it, and it's crazy. Everybody says, you know, you got to make that split decision where you want to go. We talk about it every day. You know, Jared Sandberg comes in my office about 10 to 15 minutes before we walk on the field, and he just says, hey, just go quick, pinch hit options tonight. What are you thinking? Here's who they got in their bullpen. We talk about it. And believe it or not, we did talk about if you had to put all three catchers into the game, how would it work out? Again, now you're in the moment. You got to make the call. We did it. We were probably looking at Luis Torrens running into left field. We'd have kept Dylan Moore at second base. Cal Raleigh was going to go to first base, and Murph would have caught. Now, Cal has played some games at first base out in AAA, Tacoma, just to, you know, keep his bat in the lineup. So he's got some experience, not a ton, but you're at that point in the game. You have to go for it and, you know, just put the guys out there and tell them to pretend they're like in Little League. Just go play a position, catch the ball if it's hit to you. That's kind of where we were at.
That third out went right to left field, too.
It did.
I would have loved to have seen your heart rate if it had been Luis Torrens out there instead of Dylan
and Luis's.
No doubt.
Hey, Service, there's still plenty I want to talk about with this specific game. But after the game, I found your post-game press conference, I mean, maybe I'm reading into it, but it seemed like you were a little emotional. Was there something about this team, whether it was their effort that night or just this team this season that you have right now that makes you feel like you're onto something with them or just really touches your heart in a way?
Well, it's a combination of things. I think, you know, you hit on that, this team and you know, being as young. And if you go back, you know, when we started the rebuild a couple years ago, and when you make a step back like that, you know there's going to be some pain that you have to endure along the way. The growth of young players, and you know you're kind of churning through your roster and you're trying to figure out how this is all going to play out. And then now you put ourselves in a position where, you know, we like our core group of guys. The young prospects we've talked about are starting to show up, and then they're producing. You win a kind of an emotional win. And I have to say, you know, the Astros, as everybody knows, has had our number here in recent years, and with everything that's gone on, all those things kind of play into it, and it's really emotional time. You know, you leave it all out on the field, ask the players to do it every day, and once in a while, the coaching staff and the manager does as well, and it was a lot of fun. I say all that, we're back at the ballpark today. We got to get ready to go after it tonight and see what we can do here late in the game tonight.
Scott, when people look at this team, I think the first question they ask if they're from the outside or even somewhat close is how. And I think that there are a lot of things that perhaps that you see that others don't see, that there are reasons for some of the things that you're doing. The one-run games, well, you've got that great bullpen. That has a big thing to do with it. Also, the fact that you can put yourself in those situations to even get to that. The three-run homer, was watching that last night, and everybody said, well, why are there so many three-run homers? And you're watching the at-bats in that eighth inning last night, and that, of course, was a grand slam. But I think it made a lot of sense in that just the at-bats kind of feed off of each other. Why wouldn't something like a three-run homer happen after that?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things. There's no question about it. I'm just so proud of the players, and it's about the players. It'll always be about the players and, you know, them putting the work in, them believing in each other, them leaning on each other, and then, you know, having the ability to just grind out in a bat and not trying to be the hero, because if you're not the hero, you just pass the baton to the next guy, and he has a good at-bat, and you pass it along, and all of a sudden, you've backed that pitcher into a corner where he has to make a pitch, and you hopefully put a good swing on it. So, again, you look at our overall numbers offensively, and, you know, we had a really tough month of May. It was rough for us to, you know, get hits, let alone score runs. But, you know, you look, once we got into June, things are starting to pick up, and, you know, you got to look at the big number, and overall the numbers don't look good at all. But our guys have certainly stood up in big moments, had the big at-bat, and we don't always get the hit. But we're grinding through it, you know what I mean? And there's a certain amount of pride that goes along with that, and it's something that's talked about regularly in our hitter meetings. You know, we just said, grind this guy out tonight. We got to get pitches. We got to get into the bullpen. Different things like that. It's really, you know, sunk in with our guys, and it's fun to watch play out every night.
Scott, if you could go back here a couple months, you mentioned May. There was the series in San Diego that went so poorly. What happened there that gets you to where you are today?
Well, I think, you know, every team, you get those moments. And as a manager, I think, you know, it's not football. You know, we don't play once a week. We play every day. So you have to pick your spots when you maybe have a team meeting or you put the group together and you talk about some things. And there's times to raise your voice and get on them a little bit. And there's times not to. You just want to have a discussion. And the situation in San Diego, there was a very hot team we were playing. They were on fire. If you remember, Tatis had just come back off an IL, and he was tearing it up. And everything they did was working. And we just lost a few players to the COVID IL. And everybody was kind of looking around like, oh, my God, what's going to happen here? And, you know, we just get them in a room. You talk about where we're at. It's a moment in time is really what I stress. We're in a moment in time right now, and we have to work our way through this. And the only way to do that is to lean on the guy next to you, you know, and look around the room, because there's no cavalry coming. You know, they're not. Jerry's not going to make a bunch of trades and fix it all. No, the people in this room have to get it right, and the only way to do that is you have to lean on the guy next to you and be a good teammate and continue to work, and it'll turn. And fortunately, it did. You know, I think we went off to Oakland. We won a couple games up there, and we started to get the momentum back, and it created opportunities for guys in our bullpen that we didn't know much about. You know, the JT Chargois and the Paul Sewalds, all of a sudden now, they needed to pitch in big moments, and they stepped up. They really did. And again, our bullpen has been the backbone of this club, and, you know, it really created opportunity for those guys. They step up. Now we get a couple of our guys back from COVID IL, and our bullpen is some kind of deep, and that's what we've been watching play out here recently.
Scott, I know all eyes are on the trade deadline right now, and it's a great thing for the fans to talk about. Sometimes you hear some of the players talking about it as well. It's out of, you know, somewhat out of control what a team is able to do in that time. But you look at the Mariners right now, and some help is out there in internal options. When you look at J.B. Crawford has had a rough month at the plate. We saw the three hits last night. Jake Fraley has been gone for 10 days, and you know what he can do to help that lineup out. How do you see things going forward in players that you are getting back and can kind of continue to improve?
Yeah, you know, certainly we have some guys that are out right now on the IL. We talk about Fraley, you know, Kyle Lewis, Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, all guys that we see as a big part of our, you know, core going forward, and we want to get those guys back as soon as possible, and we will eventually get them back, but there's a lot of discussion around baseball. The time around the trade deadline is great for our game. It is. It's hard in the clubhouse. You know, it's hard for players and the families, and they get tied to an organization and the community, and all those other things are really tough as the rumors are flying around. But for our game and our fan bases around the country, whatever, it's an exciting time. Everybody's looking, and they're looking at their team's chances. Can they get over the hump? Can they get into the playoffs or whatnot? So you want to be talking about baseball, and a lot of people around the country right now are talking about baseball, and I certainly feel like they're talking about baseball more in Seattle than they have in recent years, which is a really positive thing.
And I love the staying after to applaud the crowd last night. I mean, I felt like it was just a nice moment. I saw you kind of looking around, taking it all in, and just thanking the crowd for being there and supporting you guys even after getting down. Pretty cool moment to watch, and certainly for Mariners fans. God, what an amazing night.
It really was, and our fan base has been awesome, you know, and even players that haven't played here much, you know, I don't know, we had 15, 16,000 people in there, but man, it's like, man, it gets loud in here, and I said, it really does, and it's a credit to our fans, and hopefully they keep coming out in bigger numbers as we move forward.
You mentioned what Kelnick had to say to you when he was in the on-deck circle. What are you seeing from him and his at-bats right now?
I don't know if there's a young player hitting 100 to get pitched tougher than he does. I will say that. You know, the amount of left-handed pitchers he has faced since he's been brought up, and we knew we were going to face some left-handed starters, but it seems like every team is kind of matching up kind of around, right around where he's at in the lineup to get that lefty in there. And along with that, he's seeing a lot of breaking balls, a lot of off-speed pitches, which everybody struggles to hit. It's not just young players. The veteran guys don't hit them that well either. The positive signs are in the last few games when he's been up in those big moments, it's a huge learning experience for him. And, you know, for him to be able to slow it down, lay off some of those pitches and take the walks. You know, last night I thought he had a great swing at the 3-0 pitch that Stanek threw him. And you're just kind of waiting for that one moment where he squares one up, gets the big knock, you know, drives in the big run. It's going to come. There's no question it's going to come. But his attitude's been great. Much different this go around than he was when he was here earlier in the season. He's maturing, and
How so?
Right now he's focused on winning games.
How has he been different?
I think his ability to control his emotions a little bit. I think, you know, people that saw him come up, and you know, there's so much tied to him, and you know, he's kind of like the leader of this group, you know, and everybody sees the upside and the chance for him to be a really special player, and he put a little bit maybe too much pressure on himself, and you know, he just didn't handle it great. He'd get really frustrated every time you made an out, and you're going to make outs. You're going to make a lot of outs in his career. He's also going to get a lot of big hits and have a lot of great at-bats and make some great catches in the outfield. And you can't wear yourself down with all the negative self-talk. And that's gotten a lot better since he's been back.
All right. He is Mariners manager Scott Servais, joins us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. And this one was an especially fun interview following last night's win. Best of luck to you guys tonight. We'll be watching. And thanks, Scott.
Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, try not to get into a 7-0 hole again tonight, okay? can you just, like, win right from the beginning?
We'll try our best.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. And that was Mariners manager Scott Servais joining us for the Scott Servais Show every Tuesday at 1 p.m. I have all these old-timey swears that I pulled up for him. I think he should call Dusty and the crew. You guys are afternoon farmers. You're all hat and no cattle, see? That's what some
of you got to be careful with some of these old-school things because you don't know what they come from.
No, they have explanations
okay,
of
good.
Them.
Okay, good. You don't want to accidentally run into something
no.
that's super offensive
all
to a group of
no
people.
All hat and no cattle says you're an empty boaster,
okay,
a man
good.
Who's all talk and no action.
Good.
I don't know. I'm doing my research here. Okay, well-researched. Shannon, what stands out to you from our interview with Scott?
Oh, so much. It was good to hear a little bit more on what is going on with Jared Kelnick right now, because that's going to be so important going forward, not only in what they're doing and trying to get to the postseason this year, but in getting him ready for next year and getting some of these first out of the way. And he has been different the second time around. That really jumped out at me. Saw something absolutely fantastic a couple of nights ago. The team won one of the games against Oakland, and everybody does the high-five line. They're all clearing out of the dugout, and there's Jared sitting on the last bench in the dugout with Tim Laker and Jared DeHart, and they had a long conversation there. And everybody else had left the field, had gone back into the clubhouse, and it was kind of a realization on Jared's part of what he was doing at the plate. And I was told he initiated that conversation, and they were going over things, and it wasn't, why didn't I get this call, or why didn't I? It was he realized some things that he was doing. And since then, we have seen the better at-bats. We've seen the walks, and I think that's fantastic.
You know, it's interesting watching him, and Scott's right. I mean, he's getting pitched like he's a 10-year veteran. It's crazy. The pitches he took last night, that with 3-1 fastball in the outside corner, I don't mean to get too like specific about it, but dear God, that's an unhittable pitch for anybody, let alone a kid in the first couple months here in the big leagues. But my feeling watching him is that he looks defensive instead of offensive. That right, even up 3-0, he looks like he's trying to protect, trying to survive, trying to keep his head above water was how I kind of put it, versus attacking the ball, feeling confident, feeling like he belongs. And I can't give you like a, it's more of a feeling than it is a specific thing that he's doing. But it feels to me anyway like maybe he's still struggling to find his way in that way.
Well, he is extremely tightly wound. Extremely. To a detriment. Mm-hmm. That was a problem the first time up. And you cannot take every at-bat that way. But I think that what you were describing and that you wanted him to be more on the attack and the confident, we saw that the first time and it didn't work for him. So I think that right now he's kind of peeling things back a little bit. And if he looks defensive, I think he's taking it in a little bit more. I think that when he gets going good, you're going to see exactly what you're talking about.
I'm sure.
But this is not at all what he expected it to be. And so for me to see a progression now rather than I'm just going to go be Jared Kelnick now at the big league level and everything's going to work out, to see the at-bat last night, to see the walks, and know that that can usually progress. And I think he had a single into left field, too, that game or 2 games ago. And I'm like, okay, it's not the big home run that he thinks that he should hit. But I think you're starting to see a progression with what he's doing.
You just knew he was going to try to steal second after that one, too, didn't you? Like, oh, he's going. This dude is so desperate to contribute to what they're doing in some way. You know he's going. And, of course, the A's knew it, too, and ended up throwing him out.
And it's just something that, you know, he's like that, you know, the little kid who's trying to keep up with the big kids, who's doing everything. And you kind of see that there. And that's all part of the job that, you know, Scott Servais has in front of him is to bring that along as well. And if you think about it, had this been the Astros and Kelnick been on the Astros, he would have been pinch hit for in that situation last night. And this is what this year is all about. Now he's got that experience. He saw that 98 miler. He just missed it. He knows the next time. And that's what's so important about this year.
We don't know what other moves will be made, but do you think he will survive at the big league level, Jake Fraley coming back? Or do you think he heads back to Tacoma for a little while longer?
Yeah. No, I think the process that he needs to go through is up here right now. I don't know what more he can pick up at AAA. The only reason I send him back to AAA right now is if it's up here. And if he's just, if he's tied himself in a knot and is not making progress because of that.
What if it's up here, but it's not emotional, it's mental? And I know that that's sort of a weird thing to delineate, but I don't think he's, I understand what Scott's saying. He's much more even-tempered. He seems to understand the value and the position he's in, but he legitimately has not had that many minor league at-bats. Is there something to just the amount of experience it takes seeing so many of these at-bats to know what you're going to get in a certain count? I mean, gosh, watching and listening to Mike Blowers, the dude knows every pitch before it's coming. Every pitch.
Yeah.
He's watched, I don't know how many thousands. I mean, he's really old. He's watched, I don't know how many. I'm just kidding. He's watched how many thousands of baseball games. There is something to just the seasoning that takes place in the minor leagues.
Oh, there is. And, you know, that's the reason why it would have shocked me if he'd been up at the beginning of the season this year. And that's the reason why they wanted to give him more time, I think, in the original plan in the minor leagues at this stage of his development. And they wanted to. You heard it from so many people. We'd really like to see him struggle and pull out of a struggle. Never did, never had that opportunity in the minor leagues. So now he's working it through at the big league level and, you know, at the same time picking up that experience. But the mental side is absolutely part of the process, although it's a lot tougher up here when the spotlight is on you. And I hope that one of the learnings that he had the first time, when you get that upset about one at bat, you got to realize that you got teammates out there. It's not all on you. Mm-hmm. This is a 9-player lineup. You are one part of that lineup. And think about what that says to those guys. If when you get with the program, and I think that's one of the reasons why we see the ability to hand off the at-bat to the at-bat to the at-bat, is because they do trust each other up there, and no one person has to do it all except for maybe Mitch Haniger.
She is Mariners insider for 710sports.com, Shannon Dreyer. Shannon, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you during our next Scott Service interview. Hopefully after another win.
Well, I don't know if you're going to top this one, but we'll see what we can do.
I don't think we will, but we'll find out. All right, Jacina Anderson reporting Jamal Adams is in the facility ahead of Seahawks training camp. So we'll talk about what those contract negotiations entail, what it means for this team. I'll come in your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, reminder, we need some questions from you guys. Please help your girl. What I need to know is coming up at 45 after. So 710-710, that's the Mac and Jack's text line. Any questions you have about anything? We've been talking a lot of Mariners today, a lot of trade proposals, but obviously with training camp tomorrow, Seahawks questions. Any question, Mike Salk is in for Jake. If you have questions just for Salk, 710-710, Mac and Jack's text line.
I'm going to pull myself away from Shannon. I could just sit here talking baseball with Shannon. I don't get to see Shannon enough anymore. I miss Shannon.
I always miss Shannon.
Shannon, I miss you. It's nice to see you and talk baseball with you.
Well, we're going to switch gears for just a minute, Mike.
Okay.
Because to start our show, one of our headlines earlier was about Jamal Adams. And there was a report that he'd be showing up. Jacina Anderson says she is told Jamal Adams is in the facility per source. So let's say Jamal Adams in the Seahawks facility, and let's say hypothetically he pulls Bobby Wagner where he goes to practice. He's just not practicing, but he's on the field, right?
That seems pretty likely.
Seems pretty likely right now. What's your worry level for Jamal Adams with this team? Because I said not to panic, and you said it's okay to worry.
Well, I mean, like, I think it'll get done. I just think that every day that it's not done is a day wasted. They knew they were going to sign him to a long-term deal the moment they traded 2 first-round picks for him. Let me say it again very clearly. You knew you were going to sign him to a long-term deal the moment you gave up 2 first-round picks for him. So any day that he's not signed is a wasted day.
Yeah, but were they expecting him to get 9.5 sacks?
Well, but your problem can't be he did better than we thought.
Well, yeah, oh, exactly. But the problem is that the sacks are what makes it difficult. If you got 3 interceptions, it's a lot easier for them to say, oh, we'll pay you like a cornerback.
You don't have another option, man. You have to sign this guy. You don't have leverage. You need to sign him. If you don't sign him, you should be let go. This is do or die. after giving up two first-round picks, you've made this bed. I'm sorry to use so many cliches at once.
No, it's
but
fine.
They did. Made the bed. Lie down in it.
Yeah.
Go wrap yourself in those blankets, sheets, weighted blanket, the whole deal. You're in it now. Sorry, I was just describing my own bed because my wife has this weighted blanket.
Got it.
I really hate it.
Why do you hate it? They're amazing. They're supposed to help you fall asleep.
It helps her, but it really, like, if it comes near me, I start feeling very claustrophobic.
What's your problem, man? It's just like a giant cement bag.
I don't like it. Yeah, that. Also, it weirds Wendell out. He doesn't like it. I'm worried he's gonna like choke under it. You've made this bed,
Stacey. Your problem is I think you have too much anxiety around the weighted
probably blanket. And it's supposed to relieve anxiety.
Well,
it's doing the opposite.
Jamal Adams, metaphorically speaking, could be a weighted blanket for John Schneider right now, because all he's going to be doing is thinking about this deal.
He has to get it done, and any day wasted is a day that you don't have the guy that you brought in specifically for his personality being out on the field influencing everyone with that personality.
Well, I think Jake pointed this out, too, that outside of just that, you have to worry about, look, Jamal Adams, like, he was a big part of this second half of the season and what they were able to do, him and Carlos Dunlap being the catalyst for that. If you want to continue that into the season, this isn't a guy that's Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner was not holding out, but during negotiations wasn't practicing. Yeah, he'd been with your program since 2012. Like, he knew your defense inside mm-hmm. and out. He didn't need to practice for 2 weeks. He didn't need to spend
great
an offseason. Jamal Adams hasn't had a traditional offseason with you yet, mm-hmm. and it's only his second year ever.
And there's a decent chance here that his role is consistently going to evolve. It's certainly a lot more complicated than Bobby's. Not that what Bobby does is easy, but what he does, he's been doing it, as you said, for a long time. He plays middle linebacker. That's his job in this system. Well, Jamal Adams is a safety, but he's kind of an edge rusher, and he's kind of an inside linebacker, and he kind of does this, and he kind of does that. That's a complicated thing. And, by the way, teams are going to adjust to what he did last year with 9.5 sacks. They will have taken note on that. And so how are you going to adjust to what they've adjusted to? Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point. You've got to get him out. How is he going to fit with Marquise Blair, who now you think you're going to have back? What does it look like with both of those guys out on the field at the same time? Like, there's so many of those question marks that I would love to see answered, and none of them happen with him in sweatpants sitting on the side of the field. That just doesn't work.
Do you, out of curiosity, side with, hey, if he's your best player, pay him? Or do you side with, like, how do you look at it when it comes to the way that his position kind of limits his own earning potential?
I hate that. We've talked about it before. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think,
what do you say if someone says, oh, he's not great in coverage?
Yeah, well, but he's great at something else. Neither is Michael Bennett. Neither is Kerry Hyder, but you still signed him to a long-term deal because he does things to help you win. I don't understand how the whole NFL system of we pay players based on their position isn't considered collusion.
What's wild is that...
it's collusion.
Yeah, and what's wild is hearing people complain about what players make, knowing that if there was no salary cap, another team would pay twice that to have that player.
More than that.
There's a team that would pay Russell Wilson like $60 million to come play for them right now if there was no salary
cap. The NFL Players Association is one of the weakest professional sports unions imaginable. They consistently roll over whenever given the chance to do so.
Isn't that part of the nature of the sport?
Maybe, but they have always said, you know what? We'll take less practice time instead of we'll take more money. And in this case, I don't know how they don't deal and call this. The baseball players would call this collusion. You're paying guys according to their position, and who decides my position? You?
Mm-hmm.
You've said I'm a strong safety? Why? I lined up on the edge 45% of the time last year. Why aren't I an edge rusher? Oh, well, you don't fit the weight profile. Well, then don't play me on the edge.
Yeah.
I mean, like, once you've created this amorphous game, Jimmy Graham's another one. Oh, you're a tight end. So says you.
Right.
I consider myself to be a wide
receiver.
Well,
and that difference in the franchise tag was something like $7
million. Absolutely. And I don't...
$7 million.
I would side with him. He can't block. Why is he a tight end?
Right.
I mean, so finally, his inability to block should have made him some money. Oh, I'm a edge rusher. I'm a defensive end, not an outside line. Like, all of these things have actual cash differential for players. I think it is collusion. I can't believe the NFL gets away with
What's
it.
What's always wild to me is that there is a player that will be less talented than another player making more than him because of their position.
It's ridiculous.
And I don't necessarily mean like, oh, you know, Russell Wilson's going to make more than someone else or whatever. Like,
But this guy's an outside linebacker. Yeah, but he's really good. He's better than that middle linebacker.
That's what I mean.
He's a middle linebacker.
Like a good but passable, the Jared Goff equivalent of a linebacker, someone that you'll pay to keep but isn't like making your team, is going to be getting paid what, 16, 17-ish, that would max out any safety contract.
Right. It's ridiculous. I don't understand it, especially when some of those other positions will significantly alter the game. So, look, the NFL's gotten away with it for a long time. They will continue to. I don't think Jamal Adams is going to be the one to change the whole system, but they're going to have to pay him. And then once they do, you know where my eyes are going to be. First of all, they're going to be on him to see whether or not he's healthy, how he contributes, etc. But then they're going to turn to Bobby Wagner, who's still going to be the highest paid player on this defense. And as much as I love him, he has not contributed that way for the last year or so. So what is next for Bobby Wagner? Is he going to be back to being the player that comes up with huge impact plays, forces turnovers, big third down stops, right? Everything that you expect from the highest paid middle linebacker in the game or right there with it. Yeah, I would hope we're going to see those things this year. Or I'll wonder about his future after Jordan Brooks was drafted a year ago.
All right, you've got questions, we've got answers, so get your questions in right now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything, whatever it is, text it right now, 710-710, coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. I'm going to jump right into it because there are so many questions and they're great and I don't even know where to start. So how about this one? What I Need to Know, if you can choose to add a top tier player, so let's say like best in the league at his position, to one Seattle sports team, which would you choose between the Seahawks, Mariners, or Kraken?
Oh, I think I'd take the Mariners.
Really? Yeah. Is it because of last night's game and the excitement?
No, it's because I love baseball.
Okay. I was going to say, what if you could add like Aaron Donald to the Seahawks?
That'd
or you
good.
Could add, I don't even know who you'd want to add to the Kraken.
I mean, you could...
Connor McDavid.
Yeah,
I'd take Connor McDavid on the Kraken tomorrow.
However, they
fun.
Can get scoring.
Well, I mean, just Connor McDavid on any team would be great.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I would take the Mariners. What about you? What would you take?
Probably the Mariners because I'm desperate to see the postseason, but that would be my reasoning.
I mean, what if you could add Shohei Ohtani to the Mariners? You'd be adding great outfielder.
We had that chance.
Yeah. I would like to not take that trip down memory lane. Mm. Speaking of the Kraken, what I need to know, I want Salk's thoughts on the Kraken signing Schwartz from the Blues. And then they say, please. Very nice.
Oh, please.
Texter. Very nice.
Very hockey.
Yeah.
I like it. Sounds like they're going to make this deal official tomorrow when free agency actually opens. Jaden Schwartz is a scoring center, and they need that. Puts up 20 goals a year, can pass as well. I mean, again, you look at this team, they've got more than enough, more than they can handle, capable NHL defensemen. They don't have enough scoring, and they don't have enough centermen. So... yeah, I like deals like that.
I'm excited for this question. Hey, Salk, what I need to know, we all know that you hate timeout mismanagement in football.
Do. Yes.
This texter says, what's your baseball equivalent pet peeve to your
so
hatred
many.
Of timeout management in football? What's
so
one
many.
That, like, every time it happens,
inability
you feel
to,
blood rushing
inability
to your
to lay down a bunt drives me insane. And I'm not saying they should bunt more often than they do, but when you're called upon to bunt, you should be able to get one down. Not driving in a runner from third with less than two outs in a close game, making the first or third out at third base, making the second out at home plate, all of those things drive me completely insane. Coming in with a big lead and immediately throwing a walk drives me crazy.
Okay. Okay.
Dude, I could go on all day with small things in baseball
That's
that make
clear.
Me like punch stuff.
Are the Mariners buyers, and if so, who? I mean, yes, I think all of us can agree there's some kind of hybrid between buyers and sellers where they're buying for now but aren't willing to risk their future in a way that a team desperate to win right now would.
Yeah, they're long-term buyers.
Yeah, right. But I do think that I would prioritize getting someone that can help you this year and next over someone that can help you a 20-year-old prospect.
Yeah, I just keep thinking that Whit Merrifield will end up being the guy and that this Trey Turner thing, which, you know, Trey Turner's an all-star caliber, if not MVP caliber player, it just feels like more of a attempt for leverage to try to show Kansas City that they don't need to get Merrifield. They have other options.
I have a non-sports question. Oh. Someone says, what I need to know, what's the scariest movie you guys have ever seen?
What's yours?
Mine is, this is specifically based, like most people, on the environment, time, context in which you watched it. And mine was The Ring. I watched it when I was in like 6th or 7th or 8th grade.
That'll
I don't
do it.
I don't remember. So I'm already a young person. It was unlike any scary movie I'd ever seen before. And I went home to a home by myself because then my mom had to leave. And so I was terrified. And to this day... I have not seen the full Ring video that's in the movie because I closed my eyes.
My answer is probably Ghostbusters.
That's the scariest movie you've seen. seen.
I don't watch scary movies ever. Ever. I am petrified of scary movies. And in fact, I think that scary movies should not be allowed to show commercials on television.
Ghostbusters?
Yeah. Scared the heck. I didn't open my refrigerator for like 4 years.
What would be something that would only be scary to you in a movie? Like, what's something that, you know what I mean? Like, something where you're like, like a sports thing where you'd be like, this should be a scary movie only sports fans
like
would understand.
Second and goal from the one?
That's exactly what it is. All right. What I need to know, which player, we're back to trade talks for the Mariners. What player would you be the most excited for if the Mariners traded for him right now?
Who's like actually within reason?
Yeah. And Curtis, if you have one too. Within reason. Let's do not like, oh, if they
got Trey Turner, I don't know that I would be able to contain my excitement. That's okay. An MVP caliber player. He's not an MVP, but he's close to it. That would be pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. The names they've been linked to.
Yeah.
He's probably the best. Jose Ramirez, another one. He's an MVP candidate himself.
And unfortunately, just the pitching, they just don't seem to be linked to any kind of, big name starting pitching. I'm sort of resigned to the fact that it's just going to be somebody who can capably hold up the back end of the rotation, which they're going to need. They're going to need that.
Someone adding what I just saw on Twitter, Brady Henderson. I mentioned this because we said it earlier in the show. Happy birthday, Brady. Said Alden Smith trial in Louisiana scheduled for August 24th. What does it mean for his availability for training camp? Brady added, just so everyone is caught up, that Alden Smith is expected to report to training camp and he's in shape. So has been working out, as opposed to during OTAs, it was implied that maybe he wasn't up to snuff yet.
Do you want Alden Smith here?
I'm in... different in that I am desperate for improvement on the edge. I do wish it would come from... I would feel happiest about the development of this team if your biggest contributors were guys on rookie deals that you had drafted.
I would just like to not have Alden Smith on my team.
I mean, that too. That would be nice.
I won't root against him, but yeah. I'm hoping that somebody else wins that job.
Who would you want to win that
Anyone job? Else.
Well, because I would initially say, before we knew that Daryl Taylor was going to be competing at Sandbacker, sure. I would say Daryl Taylor. I'd say I'd love to see, if you told me Daryl Taylor finished the year with 9 sacks, I'd be elated.
I mean, you're going to have to like get me to start hoping for Rasheem Green, I guess, who I have very little faith in. But like, I really am hoping that Alden Smith's not on the team.
What I need to know, is there any player you want the Mariners to be linked to that they haven't yet that you feel like is realistic? So we know that they've been linked to Trey Turner. We know they've been linked to Trevor Story. We know they've been linked to Whit Merrifield.
I like Kyle Gibson. Pitcher. Starting pitcher with Texas. Haven't really heard that name much.
I'm surprised they haven't been linked to him.
I know. Maybe it's the in-division thing. I don't know.
What I need to know... what's your best guess as to where Deshaun Watson will end up? Before I ask this, can I say that it is
Jail's
weird?
Jail's not an option, right?
I was going to say, the Deshaun Watson thing feels very weird and inappropriate to talk about as though there's no other context around it.
No, and it's confusing, and I don't fully understand the situation nor the story. I mean, my guess is that right now nobody wants to touch him with a 10-foot pole, so he's going to stay in Houston.
How about this one? I'm getting a couple questions about Jared Kelnick. Unsurprisingly, it's about people who are nervous and wonder if the Mariners should trade him when his value is highest, meaning like as a prospect with only upside.
Yeah, now, too late.
Well, I was going to say, I think both of us would say, hey, calm down. But I know you and Shannon were talking about him for a while.
Well, I just think that I think his value is actually at its lowest right now. Like he's come up, he's struggled a little bit. I think he's going to be just fine, but there's no way you deal him now. I do think he could use a little bit more seasoning in the minors, and it's just some more time having at bats and getting used to professional pitching. I understand why he's up, and I think he can learn a lot, and I think that he's done a great job, and his at-bats recently have been much more professional. But, yeah, I'll admit to some level of I just don't think that he's ready. I don't think he's – it doesn't hurt my long-term prognostication for him. I just don't think he's ready.
What do you see when he's at the plate? Is it specific, like –
that's what I said to Shannon. I just see sort of defensiveness. Like, he comes up there looking – it almost looks like he's already protecting the plate just when the count starts.
I'm going to end with this very last question because you said it earlier from the 509, what I need to know. And am I crazy to think this Mariners team feels a little like the early Seahawks, 2013, 2012, 11?
Well, it's earlier than 13. It's 11
Definitely
or 12.
Earlier than 13.
It's 11 or 12, and that's the question. Are they a playoff team that's not quite ready yet, like in 2012? or are they not quite a playoff team that's waiting for that one big gun to kick them over the top like 2011?
All right. He is Mike Salk. He's also filling in for Jake on Thursday. As a reminder, we will be out at training camp. Seahawks training camp starts tomorrow. We will be broadcasting live from the VMAC. So excited to be there, but you don't have to wait for tomorrow for more sports talk. Wyman and Bob coming your way next, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.